As a society, we're surrounded by opportunities to spend more, acquire more, and take up more space. Having a large home and filling it with possessions is one way that we judge whether we've made it or not, even if it represents a mountain of debt, constant stress, and not as much time for family, friends, nature, and community as we might like. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Tammy Strobel is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She blogs at rowdykittens.com, and Tammy joins us today from the studios of KUCI on the campus of the University of California, Irvine. Tammy, it's a pleasure to have you join us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you know, your book is really wonderful. I pretty much devoured it. And I will admit right up front that I tend to accumulate a lot of stuff. And I like to keep it around me. And it's comforting. And, you know, I can get really kind of twitchy and cranky when I have to get rid of things. But your book really helped me see things in a different way. You know, I think there's this connotation right now about downsizing, given what's happened to many workers in the economy, that, you know, that they're getting downsized out of their employment. But one of your inspirations, Dee Williams, kind of reframed downsizing our possessions and the way we live our lives to smart sizing. And what does that mean?
Well, I think it's really just about reprioritizing what really matters to you. And first, I want to say thank you for reading the book and the kind words about it. but really, you know, throughout our kind of smart sizing process, we've kind of reframed what is really important to us. And over the years, I've discovered that it's really not about stuff. I mean, stuff can be great. Stuff serves as tools to do our work every day and things like that, provide shelter. But what's really important is the people in our lives and, you know, being able to spend time with them. And interestingly, when I was researching for the book, you know, a lot of happiness researchers have found that a key indicator for living a happy and healthy life is having strong relationships.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like that there are a lot of things I like about the book. One is that you don't pretend that it was easy, and we'll talk about the process that you and your partner went through. But I really like that you don't advocate set rules, like how many square feet per person is allowable, or, you know, only X number of possessions are okay to have. You really encourage people to figure out what makes sense for their own lives while also pushing themselves beyond what they think their comfort zone is.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, in the book, I talk about how there's kind of no one size fits all solution for, you know, simplifying your life. I mean, it would be nice if there was. It would have been made our process easier. But it's really about kind of examining what works for you and your family and, you know, moving on from there.
And yeah, that actually reminds me of a book that crossed my desk recently that said, just tell me what to eat already. And I think there is something really attractive of just tell me, you know, I can only have this many pairs of pants, and just tell me that I can, you know, only take up this amount of space. You know, sometimes that almost feels easier than having to make those decisions for ourselves. But it really does have to be our own decision, and different people are going to have different priorities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, like, for example, Logan, my partner, and I, we don't have any children, but I profile a lot of folks in the book who do have kids, and their lives look very different from mine. And that's totally okay. Like, my blogging friend, Leo Babauta, he has 6 kids. So, you know, he's not going to fit in 128 square feet with his kids. And that's totally okay.
Yeah. And let's make sure people actually, we'll definitely go into the more details and the process that it took you to get there. But you and your partner and 2 cats, I believe, live in a 128 square foot tiny home on wheels.
Right. It's a really sweet little house. It looks like a tiny little cabin. And you had mentioned Dee Williams earlier, and she helped me reframe kind of what I wanted out of life, and just kind of reading about her story and seeing her video on YouTube, basically it profiled her little house. And when I saw the house, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have one of those, because it was so cute.
And someone asked you why you and Logan decided to have your own personal tiny house designed and built instead of, say, repurposing an existing trailer or RV. And I think your reasons were really interesting because those kind of, this is your primary residence. Those other things are not made to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's with the tiny house, it's great because it's built for year round use. And a lot of RVs and like Airstreams, they're really great and cute. But for wintertime, it's a little chilly. And then there's issues with like condensation. Whereas with our tiny house, it's really, it's like a house, but it's on wheels. And, you know, we've got wool insulation. So we're nice and toasty in the winter.
We are talking with Tammy Strobel. She is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She blogs at rowdykittens.com, and you can talk with Tammy. You can call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or leave a question or a comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Does the idea of radically reducing your possessions appeal to you, or does it make you nervous? Do you think you could do it? Do you have any desire to try? We'd love to hear from you. Now, Tammy, you really focus a lot on debt and how it's critical to get out from under it, to really find happiness, really give yourself the space to be happy. But being in debt is almost expected in the U.S. What did it mean for you?
Well, debt made me very stressed out. I mean, I'm sure a lot of folks experience that same feeling. You know, when I got out of college and started working, I was $30,000 in debt, and most of that was from student loans and cars. And so Logan and I slowly worked over the years to pay off those loans, and now we're debt-free, which is great, but it's it definitely gave me a lot of anxiety, and it made me feel trapped in jobs that weren't necessarily a good fit for me.
And I think it's really fascinating talking about the how much we have come to expect that being in debt is just normal, and that there's a time where you're so far in debt that you lose kind of the motivation to try to get out of it. And you say a couple times, at least in the book, that even though you and Logan were in debt and were very stressed by it, and it was, you know, causing tension, and but then you would go out and splurge on something because you thought, well, we're never going to get out of debt anyway, so what's another couple hundred dollars?
Right. And I definitely was in that mode, and it didn't help in terms of like stress level. You know, it was like when we bought a new car, we were already in debt, but then we were like, well, it doesn't matter anyways, because we're always going to be in debt, versus kind of reframing our perspective and rethinking things a little bit. You know, we could have bought a used car instead, which would have decreased the debt load. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it took us a lot of years to kind of rethink what debt really meant for us and to pay it off.
And you went from two cars to one car to no cars.
Right. And I think, you know, with kind of smart sizing our lives, getting rid of the cars was one of the hardest things for us to do, because cars can be great tools. You know, they get you to places quickly, but they're also very expensive. And selling our cars was one key way that we were able to pay off our debt faster. And, you know, in turn, I also lost weight. I felt happier. I was, you know, spending more time outside. All really good things.
And Logan really enjoys his, I think it's a 6-mile commute to work on his bike.
Well, it was.
It was.
Things have changed. Yeah, things have changed a little bit for us since the book came out. We were in Portland, Oregon, and we have relocated to Yreka, California. Hmm. We're actually about 12 miles outside of Yreka, so we're in a very rural part of Northern California. A lot of compounding factors prompted us to move. The biggest one was that my father died in June, and Logan found out that his job was being moved to Boston. Hmm. And he was offered a position in Boston, but opted not to take it because we wanted to stay on the West Coast to be closer mm-hmm. to family.
And it's those relationships that you really have seen blossom by being able
yes.
to focus less on debt and commuting and things like that.
definitely. I mean, for example, this week I'm in Southern California watching my nieces and nephews while my stepbrother's on vacation. So, you know, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to kind of shift my work around
right.
so that I could do this and be there, be here with the kids. And I feel really fortunate to have that option.
Ruth in Altoona has a comment, so let's go to the phones. Hi, Ruth.
Yeah, all of what you're talking about this morning fits really well into the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair
mm-hmm.
that's in Custer, Wisconsin once a year.
Yes.
It's always over the Father's Day weekend. It's just awesome. It goes on for 3 days, and it's
oh, wow.
it's just excellent. And all the, and like I said, everything you're talking about gets covered there and more. It's all about various kinds of sustainability
mm-hmm.
and permaculture. But when you were talking about the trailer, I went to a session there where they were living, you know, people were living in smaller homes in order to do what you're talking about. And in order to survive the winter, they put the trailer into a hoop house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to figure out the exhaust and everything, you know, to keep everything safe. But they were able to figure that out. And it created, you know, there were some plants that, you know, made it very long into the winter and then came up much earlier in the spring. And so they had extra warmth by putting their small trailer into a hoop house.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and I thought so too. So I wanted to share that and also mention the Midwest Energy Renewable Fair, because MREA is just awesome.
That's a great resource that, as Ruth said, is in Custer, Wisconsin, which is not far from Stevens Point, and it's a multi-day fair with tons of workshops and displays and, like she said, really focused on sustainability.
That sounds amazing. I'd love to go. It'd be a long drive, though.
So we will be back with Tammy Strobel after the news, but I just want to give people something to chew on here. Tammy now lives in a 128-square-foot house with a partner and two cats. Is that something you could do? Can you imagine having that few possessions in that little space? That's something to think about as we come back with Tammy Strobel after the news. If you closed your eyes and tried to picture and list everything you own, could you do it? Are there items in your closets, your kitchen cabinets, the basement, or the garage that you never really use but can't seem to part with? Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Whether you feel like you're drowning in a sea of debt and possessions, or maybe you've started the process of simplifying your life in ways you would never have dreamed of, I think you'll enjoy our visit with Tammy Strobel today. She's the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. Join in with your questions or suggestions by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment or maybe a picture of your tiny house on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Like the page to get regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back with Tammy Strobel right after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller and talking with Tammy Strobel. She's the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She blogs at rowdykittens.com, and she's joining us today from the studios of KUCI on the campus of the University of California in Irvine. And Tammy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So there's a lot to talk about, but I want to get to Kathy in Denmark because she's been waiting a while to ask you a question. So let's go to the phones right away. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if your guest had to deal with ordinances. Where I live, our ordinance says that a home cannot be on wheels and it has to be over 640 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah. the township doesn't want any kind of mobile home or manufactured, you know, motor home that you live in.
Interesting.
Year-round. And the homes have to be of such and such a size. So.
Wow. So is that something that you've heard of, Tammy?
Yes, it's actually kind of a big problem for folks who want to live in tiny houses. And when we were in Sacramento, California, they had, or still have, to my knowledge, a similar ordinance. And part of the reason we moved to Portland, Oregon was not only because we knew that we wanted D. Williams to design and build her house. Katie Anderson helped in that process too, but Portland is really supportive of kind of these alternative structures. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in a gray area in the code, and so they're not technically illegal, but they're not legal either. And now, you know, we're in a rural area outside Yreka, California, and, you know, in a super, super rural area, there just aren't those kinds of ordinances right. When you're out of the city limits. So we haven't had to deal with that in our current location.
And so it was in Portland where you put your tiny house first.
Right. It was actually built in Gig Harbor in Washington, and then Katie towed it down to Portland for us, and we put it in a backyard in North Portland, and it was really awesome. I mean, all our neighbors loved the little house, and people were super supportive of, you know, us, you know, going small. So that made it really nice. And another thing about Portland, too, is a lot of the, with the zoning and code issues, it's a complaint-driven system. So if any of the neighbors had not liked our structure, if they had complained, we probably would have gotten a visit from city officials. But that didn't happen. So, yeah.
And if people go to your blog, rowdykittens.com, which is worth going to just for the name Rowdy Kittens, in my opinion. But if they go to rowdykittens.com, they can also see videos and photos of your tiny house.
Right. I've got a whole photo gallery up, and there's also a little video clip of the tiny house as well. We were interviewed by a local station in Portland about a year ago, so you can get not only a virtual tour, but you can check out pictures, too.
Thanks for that call, Kathy. And you, too, can ask Tammy Strobel a question if you call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Now, Tammy, I don't think it's any coincidence that as Americans, we've gotten further and further into debt, because the average home size has also grown incredibly over the last several decades. And these statistics really kind of knocked me off my feet. You say that in the 1950s, the average home was 983 square feet. By 1970, it was up to 1,400 square feet. And then in 2004, it had expanded to more than 2,300 square feet. That's a huge change in just a few decades.
Yeah, it's really, really a big change. And, you know, it's not that big houses aren't bad, but I think they can become problematic, especially if, you know, when you can't necessarily pay for them or afford to keep up with the mortgage. And, you know, it just causes a lot of strain. I know I didn't own a big house myself, but I was in a fairly large apartment when we started this process, and the rent was higher. And, you know, I just felt really stressed out by that.
Well, and you also point out that it's not just what we pay to be in that space or the things that we tend to fill it up with. It's also the time that we spend on upkeep.
Right.
And that's time we're not spending on other things.
Exactly. I mean, in my tiny house, it takes probably a half an hour to do like a deep clean.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, and the other time I can spend, you know, taking photos or writing or just hanging out with Logan or my family. And that's made me a whole lot happier versus having to spend hours cleaning.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, you didn't go from, you know, a huge McMansion, but you did go from a good sized 2-bedroom apartment, I believe. Then, you know, it was a process to getting to the tiny house. Explain that process for us, because I think one of the things that might scare people is, what if I, you know, say, yes, I'm going to do this and, you know, go out and either rent or buy a much smaller place and then have a hard time fitting in it? But you have some ways to kind of test the waters.
Yeah, you know, when we started this process, I was actually not on board at all. Logan was the one that was like, hey, why don't we move into a smaller place? You know, we could save some money, you might be less stressed out. And so it took me a while to hop on this kind of simplicity bandwagon. But to start, and over the years, we've just gone really slow. So when we were in our big 2-bedroom apartment, we opted to just basically clean out our guest room and then shut the door. And we gave all of our stuff away in that guest bedroom and basically pretended like we were living in a 1-bedroom mm-hmm. apartment, because I didn't believe that we could actually get rid of stuff and fit into a smaller mm-hmm. space. And so we didn't.
So you kind of
move.
Fooled yourself into yeah. thinking.
Yeah. And it was great because we could kind of practice in our current space and not make the big leap of moving or buying something, but just kind of trying it on for size in our current dwelling.
And I think it's interesting because you admit it's not necessarily something you're proud of when you look back at it, but you admit that, you know, saying let's move into a smaller place really goes counter to what we've been trained to think of as like the success trajectory. And so one of the things that you wrestled with was what will people think? And you say you didn't want them to think you were poor, but on the mm-hmm. other hand, you were because that, right. that larger lifestyle was keeping you in debt.
Yeah, it was definitely a struggle for me because I was really tied into, well, what will other people think of me? What will my family think? Like, will they still love me if I decide to go in this, you know, radical way? And it was fine, but it was just like this slow process and involved lots of conversations. But it's definitely been very liberating for us to go small.
Well, Greg in Milwaukee has had a similar experience, so let's go there. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I moved up to Burnett County in 1998. I got a place way out in the forest. I was 16 miles northwest of Spooner. I still own the property and everything. But a man got Alzheimer's, and his family didn't want this rick of popple that he had, and it was 8 by 8 by 16 feet long. And I built a shack, and I insulated it and everything, and I wired it, and I had electricity put in, but it was only 14 feet by 10 feet, so it was 140 feet. And I lived in there. I had a microwave. I had to take the legs off the table to get it in, and I built it around the refrigerator. I put that down on the floor, and then I put the walls up. A tornado went through siren, and I got 5 sliding glass doors, and I used that for one side. it's excellent. I mean, I had a bear come in my house once and eat my donuts. It was wild.
Well, it sounds like it's been a great experience for you, Greg. And Tammy, you definitely, you know, everything in the book and even just when I was corresponding with you about the interview, you just seem light and happy and you know, like you've really been able to spend your resources, meaning your time, your money, your attention on things that really matter to you.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I'm in a really good place, and that doesn't, you know, I have my own struggles too. This has been a hard year for me with, you know, my dad passed, and at the same time, a lot of really amazing things have happened too. I have this book out in the world, and I'm close to my family now, and so that's all really positive. And so I try and really, when I start feeling sad or, just depressed, I try and just take a step back and be like, well, what can I really be grateful for in my life? And that seems to help. And happiness researchers recommend that kind of activity too.
Well, thanks for that call, Greg, and thanks for sharing your personal experience. One of the things that I really enjoyed in the book, Tammy, was that, you know, you and Logan were both very committed to this idea of, you know, really simplifying your life. And as you said, it was Logan first. You were not quite, you know, completely on the bandwagon. But that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that there weren't conflicts over what was really important to keep or have. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things was that Logan felt really strongly about having this reserve of emergency food.
Yeah.
And the white buckets drove you crazy.
They did. Well, we've like come to a compromise about the emergency food, which is, you know, it's good to have. And he's really into like disaster preparedness and making sure you've got enough water on hand and enough food if something bad happens. And that was kind of for him, his interest peaked with that when Hurricane Katrina happened mm-hmm. and he saw all these people without food and water. And he was like, oh my gosh, what if something like that happened where we were? It might not be a hurricane, but it could be an earthquake. And so we ended up with lots of extra food in the house.
And so what was the point of compromise that you two came to? Because you did manage to whittle down the emergency food supply at least
a
little.
We did. Yeah, we basically kind of cut it in half, and that's worked out well because being in such a small space, like, we still want to have extra food handy, but at the same time, you can't fit a dozen white buckets in a tiny house that are packed with food, you know?
Right, right.
So we've got a nice little food pantry in the house that's stocked with mason jars, you know, filled with rice and, you know, sugar and all that good stuff. And then under our house, we have some smaller white containers that have extra food storage.
Well, and I think it's interesting because for some people, I mean, maybe you at one point would think, you know, big buckets of food, really, that's what you're going to use our precious space on. But then you point out how many of us have, you know, a particular gravy boat that we use maybe not even every year. And we have way more wine glasses than we actually have places to put people who would be drinking wine. I mean, when you look at what most American houses have, there's a whole lot of excess.
Right. And I feel like, you know, from Logan and I in our conversations, like with the food, it's his argument was, well, if I get laid off or you get laid off, at least we'll have this food in place so we can still eat, you know, if we really hit tough times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would rather have that than extra wine glasses, which I think is smart.
Right. Unless you also have buckets of wine, then you might want the wine glasses. Well, you can call in with a question or comment for Tammy Strobel. She is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. And Jack in Clinton has a question for you, Tammy, so let's go there. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Fascinating topic. I wish I was thinking maybe I should try and do what she's doing.
Baby steps, baby steps.
Yeah,
right.
Baby steps.
Right. It's so hard to part with stuff, though. Anyway, what I was wondering is, by consolidating down to the smaller size home, is there anything that Tammy is wishing she could do, but she can't because of being in a smaller size home, or her partner is having those feelings? Or does she wish she maybe hadn't gone quite so small?
I think that's a great question, Jack. Tammy, what would you say?
That's a great question, Jack. And actually, you know, we're very content. We don't, I feel really happy where we are. The house fits us well, and we designed it to fit our own personal needs. So I think if you're wanting to go really small in terms of your house, I feel like the design is really crucial for space and feeling kind of content in it. But I don't have any complaints. You know, we spend a lot of time outside walking and cycling and all stuff that I really enjoy, and it's free, so that makes me very happy.
Okay, all right.
And the idea, too, I think, is that, you know, just because you don't have an item in your house doesn't mean you can't have access to it. And a really great way to build community is to have, say, a shared tool library where people can use what they need, or using the public library to get books instead of having, you know, a big bookshelf full of books that maybe you'll read some other time. But you and Logan really have reached out to different communities that kind of make up for some of those things that you might not have at your fingertips.
Yeah, definitely. And now that we're in a rural area, we're next door neighbors with my father-in-law now. So it's a lot, like, we can't just run to the store and buy something on a whim. Like, we're 5 miles from the nearest, I guess, mini mart gas station, mm-hmm. and 12 miles to the nearest, like, big shopping center. So with living on the ranch and being close to my father-in-law, you know, Logan's shared tools with him, and, mm-hmm. You know, we'll run over and borrow something if we need it and run it back. And so it's kind of just being resourceful with where you're at and trying to make it work. And it's been a lot of fun, and we've developed a lot of good relationships through just this kind of practice of sharing.
Great. And Jack, did you have another question for Tammy?
Oh, no, that's pretty much it for now, but I sure wish them luck and hope it works out well for them, and keep us posted.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. And Tammy, I want to make sure that we give people some ways that they can kind of start thinking about this simplification. If people listening are like me, they might be getting kind of excited and inspired and a little nervous to try to clear out some of the clutter. I think both physical clutter and emotional clutter, it all ties together. And you have some great ideas to help us ease our way into it. We did talk about, you know, pretending you live in a smaller space first, mm-hmm. you know, instead of making that big jump. You also give micro actions at the end of each chapter. What's the idea behind the micro actions?
Well, the micro actions are really just doable tips for people to kind of take and incorporate into their own lives if it works for them. So, like, if you're trying to declutter your living space, I would encourage folks to just look at one area of their house. Maybe it's just your china cabinet and glass collection mm-hmm. or something like that. And take a week and just pare through it and determine, like, well, could I give some of this to charity, or do I want to give it to friends or family, or do you want to keep it? And kind of by starting really small like that, I feel that it's more manageable. And at least it was for me mm-hmm. as I inventoried all my stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I also find, because I do have a hard time getting rid of stuff, that it's easier if I start with the low-hanging fruit. So things that I know are going to be a little easier for me to get rid of. And then I kind of build some momentum to get to the things that are going to be a little more emotional decisions. And
sure.
And if I jumped right to those things, even if those are the things I really need to get rid of, if I jump right to those things, I get a lot more stressed about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even just looking in your closet and getting rid of the clothes that don't fit you anymore or the things that you don't use is a great starting point. Like, I got rid of probably 50 sweaters when I was starting all of this.
Which you had because you were a skier, right?
Right. And I don't really ski much anymore. And I still have sweaters to stay warm in the winter, but I definitely don't need 50 of them.
Right. But it can be hard because you pick up one and say, oh, well, so-and-so gave this to me. Or, oh, this one looks so good with that pair of pants. Or, oh, I was wearing this one when, you know. And it can be really easy to have kind of a reason, not a good one necessarily if you really look at it, but a reason for each one.
Definitely. And something that helped me along the way is just kind of thinking about, like, with clothes, you know, have I worn this in the last 30 days mm-hmm. or even the last 6 months? And, you know, I think that idea can be applied to a lot of things, and just trying to determine, like, what do you really use?
Right.
And if it's just kind of a tchotchke that's collecting dust, you probably could give that
right.
away to a friend or to
right.
charity.
And with the clothes, you talk about the Project 333. Can you explain that?
Yeah, my friend Courtney Carver, she blogs at BeMoreWithLess.com, and she started Project 333 with the idea of basically wearing 33 pairs of different types of clothing for 3 months. So she went through her entire wardrobe and just basically kept the essentials, those 33 different items, and wore them for 3 months. And at the end of that process, she got rid of a lot of clothes that she realized she just didn't need anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cool and creative way to kind of rethink your clothing and also not having to give everything away
right
at that moment.
And I like that they don't count underwear, socks, or exercise clothes.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as pared down as you might think. Well, let's take a quick call from Allison in Plum Lake. I want to make sure we get to her. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I've been fascinated by this forever. And there's a man who makes something called tiny houses in Festival, California. And I was wondering if you mm-hmm. know who that guy is. And I've also
yeah.
wondered how you handle energy, like if you have little solar panels, if you're really
sure.
far off the grid. But now I hear you're right next door to your father-in-law, so maybe you're hooked up.
Well, Jay Schaefer is the guy in Sebastopol who builds tiny houses, and his company is the Tumbleweed Tiny House Company, and he has a beautiful website. I highly recommend checking that out. And for power for our tiny house, we are plugged into the grid, and so right now we're plugged into the pump house at the ranch to get power to our little house, and then we have just kind of a basic RV hose that hooks up to water. And we had a similar system in Portland. So we were kind of, I always told folks that we're sort of like a giant appliance. Our energy use is about $5 a month. So,
wow.
It doesn't, at this point, it doesn't really make sense for us to do solar, but it's a long-term goal.
And I think I remember you saying that the house cost about $30,000 to design and build.
Right.
Which, as you pointed out, doesn't sound like that big of a bargain, but that wasn't the point, really.
Yeah,
it was getting exactly what would work for you.
Exactly.
Well, Tammy, it's been a fascinating conversation, and there's so much in the book, really great suggestions of ways to take those little baby steps until you feel more ready to take some bigger ones. Again, it's called You Can Buy Happiness, and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Do Too. Tammy Strobel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.